This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin, Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, and Alec Medford. Gentlemen, I know we're going to get into the Ravens, but first I wanted to throw this out for you.
Nevermore.
There are 167 modern era players nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Obviously, Darren Woodson is on the list. I feel like we've talked about this forever, and you know our frustrations. However, among the first-time eligible players is, you know him, you love him, Travis Frederick. And so the next step is they'll reduce the list to 50 and then cut it down to the semifinals and the finals, and we'll go from there.
He was really good. He was really good at his position. Unfortunately, the syndrome, John Bray syndrome, hit him, and it kind of killed. More than anything, I think it made him change his mind about life. He was like, I'm very well off. I can do a lot of other things. But, it did kind of kill that season for him.
You know, he's still only 33.
Yeah, he's very young and still has a lot of things he can do in life. So I just don't think it was enough of a career to be a Hall of Famer. But for around here, man, we loved him, and he was awesome for us.
I think for offensive linemen, it's a longevity career.
Yeah.
It's not were you dominant for 4 or 5 years? And he was. But I get where, Kevin, you look at more dominance in the prime than longevity.
I need a little bit more here, though.
I feel like offensive line, it's really tough to have a short career as an offensive lineman, because I feel like most offensive linemen in the Hall of Fame had a good 12-year or longer career. Yeah.
He played for 7 years.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how much championships have to be part of that, because when it comes to the Cowboys, like, some of their guys are in, but they were dominant on their own and had their championships. Some guys that were on championship teams are completely left out.
It's really tough. There doesn't seem to be that same criteria outside of quarterback. And that's one of the reasons another first-timer is Eli Manning. I do not think that Eli Manning is a fundamentally better football player than Travis Frederick. I just don't. But
better than Arch?
Arch Manning the younger?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good luck, buddy. He looks awesome. But I think there's a significantly higher probability that Eli gets in than Travis Frederick, simply because of those Super Bowls, and that's how it's graded.
What if you're Joe Thomas and you're the first ever offensive lineman?
That is... He should have a say. I'm sorry.
Mike,
he should have a say in this.
NFL Network one time on their lower third area, they put Joe Thomas, and they were talking about it. It said first ever offensive lineman. And I think it was to say like 10,000 snaps or something like that. But
they forgot
said,
to put the extra.
Yeah, and he quote tweeted it and said hashtag blessed. And I always thought that was funny. But for Travis Frederick, to your point, I hope he makes it. I would love it. He played for 7 years. He made the Pro Bowl 5 times. He was second team All-Pro in 14 and 15, and then first team All-Pro in 16. He was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré in 2018. So you can see like a path where that would have never happened. I absolutely think he could have made the Hall of Fame. Where it stands now, my guess would be no. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't think he gets close, to be honest. Like the way that you just mentioned Darren Woodson, or maybe you're going to mention here in a second Everson Walls or something.
Yeah, they're still not in the Hall.
So I just don't think that he'll make I think round of 50 for sure. I do think Travis Frederick could make the round of 50, but I think when they start cutting from 50, he'll get cut almost every time until he's off the board. Great job, great career. For unfortunate that he had the crazy disease that he got, because I don't think winning Super Bowls matters except the quarterback. That's the position
that
matters. Like, too bad. Phillip Rivers, you're not making it. You didn't ever make it to a Super Bowl, and you never won one. We don't care about your records. I think you have to be Dan Marino-like for like that to be thrown out the window. And I think in today's game, I don't even, in a weird way, I don't even know if Dan Marino, if his career started in 2010 and we are coming to the conclusion of it, I don't know if he would make it by today's standards of Super Bowls mean absolutely everything.
Can I add one other thing about Travis Frederick? When he had to go through a process called IVIG while he was suffering from that. And it is not an easy process at all. They basically put you on an IV. It's a steroid they're putting into your body. And it's a long process. Lucy had to go through that process multiple times. She hated it.
Yeah.
But she was a trooper. One day, Travis did shoot a video for me and for Lucy that said, "Hey, I know this isn't easy, but you're strong and you can do this." And it was awesome. And Lucy had the biggest smile on her face. That's one of the things that I always loved about him, was that dude was awesome.
If there was a human being Hall of Fame, he's a first ballot, no doubter. He gives all kinds of time and stuff and energy to charitable causes, and that is a great example. That is an amazing story.
Yeah, man.
All right, you ready to transition back over to the Ravens?
Let's do it.
Hit me with that cut number four, if you can, please.
Lamar Jackson chased by Chanel and Carl Loftus to Likely downfield. Isaiah Likely with a block down the sideline. Likely inside the five to the end zone.
Now, I wanted to start with that player specifically because it's kind of time for our next up series and we go after the Baltimore Ravens. Feels like usually you kind of fall into this, hey, let's celebrate or lament for Monday and Tuesday and then let's start to move on and look at the next thing. When you look at the Baltimore Ravens, I feel like Isaiah Likely has been a surprise contributor early on. All of this is with two games. So I realize a lot of this is like, it's two games.
Corey, he's their Derek Lively this year.
Oh.
Okay, that's interesting. Because last year...
Spelled differently, but yes.
Last year, he had he had some time that he was in there for Mark Andrews, and he started to develop a couple of opportunities with Lamar Jackson that I thought were interesting. I was like, oh, wow. This guy, but then it makes sense because Lamar Jackson likes to throw to tight ends. The routes are easier for him to throw. The target's big. It all makes sense when it comes to that. And this is a big target to throw to. But I was kind of interested on how they would do it when Mark Andrews came back. And they were able to continue to implement him because they run out those two tight ends. So I think that's a perfect scenario for all three of them, is Mark Andrews can still be a dominant tight end, but Isaiah Likely can be one of those guys that really is more than serviceable for Lamar Jackson.
Does it feel like, with all due respect to Isaiah Likely, does it feel like a waste of time to go down that path to start when you're like, what about Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson running the ball? Like, you know what I'm saying? Isaiah Likely is a good player, and he's shown out well through these first two games. But when you see the problems that the Cowboys potentially have, does it feel like you need to go right to what's Lamar going to do if he gets out to the edge? What's Derrick Henry going to do when he runs the ball?
I'm with you. Run game first, because you look at the Ravens and you look at the Cowboys and go strength, weakness. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Their strength matches the Cowboys' weakness. That is a bad sign usually for a game plan. And you're not going to make run defense a strength. You don't have the talent to do it. You can get it better. You can commit more. Okay. Well, now, Kevin, this is where Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews come into play. Play action. Linebackers are sucked in because they're trying so hard to stop the run, and the guy gets behind you, or the guy gets a pretty free release to the outside and he catches a 3-yard easy pass, right? You try to make the game. Lamar's a good quarterback. You do try to make throws as easy as possible for him because he's one of the probably bottom third accurate passers in the NFL. So they try to make throws simple and easy for him. Well, what would be simple and easy is I have something that looks like it's going to the right as a handoff. I have a tight end, one of the two, slip out to the opposite side. I give him a 3-yard pass. Nobody's near him. He turns a 3-yard pass into a 13-yard gain.
Sure.
And so now you have those situations where I suck the linebackers into thinking, you got to stop the run because we're hitting you for 4 to 6 yards.
I know you would probably make this argument in any football game. Like, get me a turnover. But specifically against the Ravens, I feel like you're going to need to pick off Lamar Jackson at least one time. He's had interceptions in both of his first two games. Now, he also is running wild, 83.5 yards per game. But he is giving the ball back. I feel like more than maybe your average game, the Cowboys need an interception or a forced fumble in this game.
Yeah, and I think that's going to happen. I think both of those are going to happen in this game, actually.
Ooh.
Because I think that last week, the scheme that they went up against the Saints are very good at it. The Ravens aren't that great at what they're doing. Yet they haven't developed that yet to be dominant at running the ball this year. And I think also the scheme that you went up against last week, you have to really coach to defend that scheme. You really have, there are little nuances about hand placement.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But things like that, that really do get you out-leveraged if you don't coach it right. And I think the Cowboys were like, here's our base and here's some of the things. And they were in base a lot. Belichick talked about that yesterday because they got beat up so much. They were like, we can't blitz. We can't do any of these other things because they're just defeating us here. I think Zimmer is going to be very much more focused on those little nuances of this defense this week, and that's going to be an advantage to them. Again, two games into the season. I would have liked, Mike, if they were better in preseason to be more prepared for this moment, but they're only two games into the season on it right now.
Can I ask you a question off of what you just said? Would you, and I know this is dangerous, would you tell your rookie cornerback, and then also your Pro Bowl cornerback coming back from injury, man, we're leaving you out on an island. Zay Flowers, whoever it is, we cannot commit safeties to help over the top. We cannot commit linebackers to kind of flood that zone area underneath because we need nine guys committed to the run defense and committed to Lamar Jackson and committed to the tight ends. We have to have you guys play man-on-man with no help if we're going to slow down or stop what we are really bad at.
I would say I would love that, but you still have to have your eyes in the backfield when Lamar gets open, when Lamar gets out there. Like, you still have to be able to make some of those stops, too. I don't trust Diggs to make tackles ever, really, honestly, but I do need that body there to force him out of bounds or something, so I know where you're going with that. I'm going to need a lot more safety help than usual, I feel like.
But for the run, what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah,
about. What I'm saying is I have the safeties just peeking and playing up because I'm going to take care of the tight ends with my safeties because my linebackers, I have to have them concentrating so much on run defense and Lamar Jackson that if those guys go fly routes 40 yards down the field, you guys got them. We're not putting anybody over the top.
That could be fine, but the most important thing for this Cowboys defense, they got to get their S together on the defensive line. If their defensive line continues to get blown up the way that it was against New Orleans, mostly those two guys in the middle, they get double teams pushed around. It's going to screw up everything for your linebackers. They're not going to be able to fill gaps. They're not going to be able to get to their edges. That's how they got pulled away from those edges because they created that wall. Jerry talked about it a lot. They created that wall that said, we're blocking all the way up and linebackers are out of plays. That's where, and then Kamara was able to cut back too once they got those guys out of the play and washed them out. So I think that the biggest factor is going to be what you're doing with those two guys in the middle of your defense if they can hold up against this because they were crap in the last game.
Now, one potential advantage, and I'm sure we'll talk about this the rest of the week, is there's been a little bit of shakiness on the Ravens' offensive line. Specifically, John Harbaugh said this unit has been way too inconsistent, and guard Daniel Falele has already allowed a couple big plays in each of the first two games. Harbaugh was like, hey, because people are already asking, is he going to lose your job? and his job. And Harbaugh was like, look, he beat Ben Cleveland in training camp to win the job. So we're not ready to pull the trigger or anything like that. But that gives you an indication of some of the struggles. If two games in, people are like, hey, are you going to stick with that? So if you're looking for an advantage as we start this discussion throughout the week for the Dallas Cowboys, I'm curious to see how that Ravens offensive line holds up. Now, I know Lamar Jackson has a lot of mobility if it breaks down, but he is also apt to take a sack for sure while he's thinking, hey, I'm the best at this, and I can get out of this. So you have an opportunity there, I think, as well.
And that's where I think the fumble will come in. I don't think it's going to come out of Derrick Henry's hands as much as I think it'll come out of Lamar Jackson's hands.
Okay, I like that.
And if they're not able to, if they can't get them, if they can't run the ball the right way, I mean, they did it again. The Cowboys gave it up. They gave up the booty, and they have a history of giving up that booty right now. If they can slow that run, then it's going to force more situations for Lamar to be back in the pocket, more time in the pocket, you make him second guess himself, you can get an interception that way too.
For the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Remember, we got ticket giveaways for Cowboys Ravens in this hour, and then another ticket giveaway in the noon o'clock hour coming up next. NFL playoff snap judgments. What will be the fate for all of these 0-2 teams? We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
Second and 14. About right. Again, going down the field, and what an interception. My goodness, Cam Taylor-Britt pulled it down with one hand, and they have taken it away from Mahomes for the second time in the game.
Classic Mahomes. KNC Masterpiece back here. I'm just kidding.
Dan Hunt's right here. Give you that autographed footballer jersey.
Oh, yeah, this jersey. He's the best. Never mind. I take that back. I mean, obviously, he's great. All right. I wanted to run through this and kind of get y'all's feel for some of these teams, because you look at the expansion of the playoffs, and the NFL just expanded the playoffs again 4 years ago up to 14 teams. Since then, teams that are 1-1 have a 46% shot of making the playoffs, but teams that are 0-2 have a 6% chance of making the playoffs since they expanded 4 years ago.
Okay.
So even with the expanded playoffs, you'd think that number would be like at least a little higher.
Because yesterday, didn't Brian Billick say 11%?
That is for going back to 1990, I do believe. And so, yeah, it's actually somehow in this small sample size been a little shorter. But yeah, if you want to use that going back to 1990, it is 11%. But either way, it is low. Right now, there's 9-0-2 teams. And I also believe there's 9-2-0 teams. So I wanted to kind of run through this list and get y'all's take on these teams. I'm going to start with both of these teams because I don't know if they can both make it. The Ravens and the Bengals. So I guess my question is twofold. Yeah. Do you think they could both make it? And if not, who are you picking?
I don't think if the Ravens lose this weekend, I don't think that there's a lot of chance for them. Because that is you can't lose a lot of ground against in that division.
And their next 2 weeks are brutal.
That division's going to be very, very tight all the way to the end. And you can't be down 0-3 to start and without having a spectacular run. So I have a real struggle with them. And the Bengals, the same kind of story there. Their offense looks just so out of it, man. Yeah. And granted, New England came with a great defensive plan against them. But, you know, start of the season, they were bad. So I think both of those teams have a struggle on their hands to, if they get too far back after this weekend, if they're 0-3, I think it'll be terrible for them.
They both make it, and the two teams in front of them don't make it.
You don't think
that I get it.
Pittsburgh's real because the quarterback?
I don't think you can win. Now, look, they have a great coach, top three coach in the NFL in Mike Tomlin. But I don't think you can make the playoffs by scoring under 20 points pretty much. I think almost every game, like getting to 20 will be a big number for them. And so I just don't think they're going to be able to survive a 17-game schedule season with that offense. So I think that they're going to end up 9-8, maybe even 10-7. And maybe that gets them in the last wild card spot, and maybe three teams make it. I don't think Deshaun Watson beat Jacksonville. And unfortunately, Jacksonville looks like they're
going to get to your team in a second.
Yeah. So I look at Baltimore and Cincinnati, and we just went, Joe Burrow's 1-9 in the first 2 weeks of the season in his career. I don't know why.
That is wild.
So I think that both teams bounce back. They get to 10-12 wins, and both teams make the playoffs.
I have to admit, my thought on both of these next two teams, the Colts and the Titans, I didn't think they were going to make it before. I certainly think they're done for.
I mean, in the world of quarterbacks, Will Levis is bad. So bad that his coach asked, "What the F are you doing?"
What a great line.
And then called him out at the press conference and was like, "It was dumb. It was stupid." And he did it last week, too. And then, so I think, you know, you have to have a good quarterback. Will Levis is not a good quarterback. Anthony Richardson is a roller coaster quarterback.
Fair.
And consistency. You might get some big plays out of him, but you're going to get some ones that you're just like, I don't know, man. So, that's going to be a struggle for both of them, too. That whole division looks weird, though, man.
Okay, so but I'm going to get to that other team in that division in a second. Colts and Titans. Done?
Yeah, the only thing is the unknown of Anthony Richardson and his possible ability to get better as the season progresses. But I would lean towards Houston, with 3 weeks to play, will be playing for playoff seeding, not their division.
I also am curious, Kevin, regarding the AFC East. I think we had three teams. Mike and I had three teams out of the East that were going to be in the playoffs. And now I have question marks about the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I have question marks about the Jets, too. And because the Chargers have started 2-0, I have question marks about how much space there's going to be available in the playoffs and the wild card.
Tua T has a lot of question marks swirling around his head.
He does, yeah.
He did get put on injured reserve, as I think we predicted. They said he's going to see some, I believe, neurologists and other specialists to determine what the next step is. I have no idea how those meetings are going to go. I think he's going to push to get back out on the field. I don't know if that's a good idea for him as a human, but I understand why he would be like, this is my identity.
In a weird way, we won't know if he's in his mid-20s right now. It's going to be 25 years or more until we... I mean, I hope at least it's that much time, because now my brain just went into, and I hate saying this, it went into Junior Seau and guys like that.
Yeah.
Their brain got so messed up that they decided to take their lives.
It can absolutely be terrifying. Now, Mike, I'm going to start with you on this one. 0-2 team, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wow.
I think that they are going to have a head coaching change, and I'm not blaming Doug Peterson. I will make this clear. I am blaming Trevor Lawrence. In his own words, we suck right now. And he is right. And it's him. He's the $55 million quarterback. And if you don't like Dak Prescott, you would really hate Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
So I don't know why he's so bad. They can't move on from him. They've made the commitment. So the Khan family, I think, is going to have a very tough decision 2 to 3 weeks from now. Doug Peterson, who took over for Urban Meyer, looked like the right hire in year one. In year two, what happened? And in year three, I think that they have to think about, we have to blame somebody, and it doesn't look like Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence is a good marriage. It looks like a bad combination, and one of them you're stuck with for the next 3 years.
Corey, you echo said sentiments.
I wanted so much more for that team. I really did. Because I like Trevor Lawrence in college, and they just
they cool colors.
Yeah, they well. But I like Travis Etienne. I liked him a lot too. And they just can't get it all together. They're a bad franchise, man.
Here's the other thing. I didn't know this. Jaguars go into the water and they kill anacondas and they kill alligators.
Yeah.
They are swimming predators.
Where did you learn that?
Like TV. National Geographic.
Yeah.
Oh. I watched Jaguars get into the water, and I'm like, this isn't going to be good for them. They're going to show me that a gator or a hippo is going to kill this thing. And they're like, no, I'm searching out the biggest snakes. I am searching out, they call them caiman, in the rainforest, but they're alligators. And They kill those suckers and eat them.
Man.
Jaguars are unbelievable, except in football. Really struggle in football.
Yeah.
Unless they have Mark Brunell and Jimmy Smith.
One of the guys in the front office is running a wrestling thing instead. Yeah. Like, it's wild.
Yeah, next thing I know, old T-Law is going to be wrestling
Satnam Singh.
Satnam Singh.
Satnam Singh is absolutely employed by AEW.
And
all right.
THJ or whatever his three letters are. RGF.
MJF?
Yeah, there you go.
That's your guy. All right. The Broncos. Now, before you answer this, I want to throw out what I feel is the most astonishing statistic, perhaps, of the NFL season. Bo Nix, 35 for 41 when throwing passes that go in the air less than 5 yards.
So he's got the check down game, huh?
Here's the other part.
Stephen McGee was at the A&M quarterback who refused to throw it past 5 yards, even in practice.
Yes. Well, I get it for Bo Nix. On passes of more than 5 yards in the air, he is 11 for 36 with 4 interceptions. His 30.6% completion rate on such passes is the lowest in the league by 6%. And the worst for weeks 1 and 2 in the last 10 years.
Oh, man. That's bad. That's bad. And that's damning on Sean Payton right now, too, because he's the quarterback genius.
Yeah.
So you go back in history and go, well, it was obviously all Drew Brees.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, man, like, did you hear his quote after the game? What happened on this play?
Oh, yeah. Like, we didn't play that yesterday. Dang it. I had it yesterday.
Tell me. At least tell me, because I don't know.
He said, drop back, threw the ball, other team caught it. And so, like, was one of those just very sarcastic. He already looks like he's fed up with everything.
Feels tough to have that sort of sarcasm on the offensive when you're playing so bad.
I don't know if this is right or not. I don't think there is a conclusion or a right answer to this, but maybe J.J. McCarthy getting hurt and missing this season is the best thing for his development. Now, what stinks is he can't practice his development because of injury, but Bo Nix, I just don't think he should be out there yet. I don't want to put on him. He's going to be a bad quarterback, but it looks horrible to start off, and maybe they should really think about, let's just go with Zach Wilson. Right, that's their backup, you told me the other day. And just give him time to see the game, and maybe in maybe Thanksgiving weekend or whatever, maybe that's when we throw him out there and he understands the NFL game.
I'm going to lump these two in together as well. I'm sure you can figure out why. The Giants and the Panthers.
The Giants, no.
Surely it's no to
the
both
Panthers.
Of them, right?
If they win a game this year.
Oh.
I'm with you.
Okay.
It will be because an earthquake happened and the other team fell into the hole that the earthquake fell into, and they'll be like, well, we got to give you the win.
So they need to go on a West Coast trip.
Yeah.
Because big time earthquakes like that only happen on the West Coast. The San Andreas Fault.
Yep.
Is that the only place in the United States where big time earthquakes?
I think
happen?
Small well, earthquakes, but I think the
and in Alaska.
Alaska. Yeah, I don't consider that the United States. They're way up there. They're
it's
more,
almost Russia. Yeah.
Yeah, they're more Russia, Canada.
Okay, last team I have for you, maybe the most intriguing team on this list, the Rams. At 0-2, you think they're done? Okay, I'm intrigued
by that.
I just
don't know who he's going to pass to. Their whole, I understand that they have a great offensive system, and they have a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback at the end of his career. But when you had Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua as the outside options, that's the fear of the defensive coordinator. What's the fear now? If you're facing the Rams, what's the fear of how they're going to dictate the tempo, score the ball? There's no fear.
Yeah, and the injuries they have across that team are it's brutal. Sucks. Some seasons you get that. Some seasons you're like, you're pretty healthy the whole season long, and then the next season you're like, oh man, I don't know exactly what happened. And that's where they are right now. Just like even on the offensive line, I don't know if Matt Stafford's, I thought he was healthy coming into the season, and now it's like, okay, he might get beat up a little more. So that's going to be a tough one coming from where they are right now. I just don't think they can.
I think I'm with you guys.
Especially now that the Cardinals look real.
Yes.
Like, that's something that you're like, hold on.
I'll have another question for you about the Rams probably later in the show with that kind of in mind.
I dare you to have questions.
Okay. I'll see what I can do. I dare you, Corey, to do something else.
Let's give something away!
877-881-1053, caller number 10 and 11. We got two sets of party passes to give away for Cowboys-Ravens this Sunday, September 22nd, courtesy of Miller Lite. That's callers number, 9 and 10. 877-881-1053. We don't have an 11. 9 and 10, 877-881-1053. Two pairs of party passes to give away right now. And coming up next, it's Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassick.
Wyatt Lankford is not only having a rookie of the month, he is having a player of the month next.
Here comes Little. The swing and a high drive deep right field. Springer going back, still going back. He turns to look. It's out of here. Opposite field home run for Wyatt Lankford. That's his 12th dinger of the year. Rangers are in double figures now at 10-7.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. Want to say congratulations to Alejandro from Irving and Josh from Aubrey. They were the two winners for our first Cowboys ticket giveaway. Now, in the noon o'clock hour, we will have a pair of seats to give away. I know we just did the party passes. In the noon hour, we got a pair of Cowboys Ravens tickets that are seated in the noon hour. Right now, time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassick.
Based off of that highlight, the Rangers are going all the way next year.
Let's go. Okay.
This magic numbers down to two. Rangers won, but Astros won. So from 3-2.
Does it need to be called something different because it's not a positive connotation? Like, magic number is usually till you clinch. This is till you have no mathematical shot.
Yeah, so it's magical for the Astros?
Yes. The diabolical number is down to 2?
I guess so. What do you...
The dark magic number.
Yeah, the potion.
Oh.
Yeah, the potion number for the Rangers is 2.
That's the thing that you said.
Okay, because, I don't know.
Now, what he's doing right now, for anybody who's not watching on the Twitch or the YouTube.
Stirring up the potion.
He was stirring up the potion, and I envisioned he was thinking of witches in that moment.
Brew.
Yes,
The bad potion.
Spell. I feel like a spell of voodoo or something like that. I don't know, man. You come up with the words.
All right.
Okay.
So going into the month of September, we kind of talked about what we hope to see from the Texas Rangers, because we knew that they were not going to make the playoffs. By August 31st, September 1st, we knew they're not making the playoffs, and they're not. But I talked about Wyatt Lankford, and I said I needed to see at least 10 extra base hits in the month of September from Wyatt Lankford. Because if I go back to August, when Wyatt Lankford hit 215 with a 624 OPS, he had two home runs, two doubles, and no triples. And if I go back to the month of July, which wasn't much of a better month, he hit 216 with a 631 OPS with two home runs and seven doubles. So he almost got to 10. But it just, you wanted to see this budding superstar because we're told so much about him and how he's going to possibly be this. But we only really saw, because you go back to the month where he was the rookie of the month in June, he hit 309 with an 894 OPS, and he had three homers, six doubles, and three triples. He had 12 extra base hits in that month. Well, so we have the month of September, and I know there's 11 more games, so things can change. But here's the great news, Ranger fans. He's already hit the number.
Yeah.
He has four home runs and seven doubles. He has 11 extra base hits with still 11 games to go. So I'm hoping at this point my new number is 15. I think that's very doable with 11 games left that he has another four extra base hits to give him by far the best month of his rookie season. 15 extra base hits in the month. He is hitting 345 with a 1.097 OPS. OPS is on base plus slugging.
Yeah.
So you take those numbers, you add them together. If you have an OPS at this point in Major League Baseball, at 8 or better, an 800 OPS or better, you're doing damage. If you have an OPS of 900 or better, you're in the top 5% of hitters in Major League Baseball. So right now, he's probably in the top 2%. Honestly don't know everybody's OPS in the month of September. I did not look that up beforehand. But just to give you an idea, I believe right now in the American League, I'd have to look, but I believe only Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, because Bobby Witt Jr. has dropped right below one. There's only two players for the whole year in the American League who have an OPS of one or better, and that is Judge and Soto. And I'm going to be honest, I don't think anybody in the National League does, because I don't think Ohtani does. I think he's right below one right now. So when you have a month right now, if you can keep that OPS at one or better, he's going to easily win Rookie of the Month.
Yeah.
I don't think he can win Rookie of the Year, but he might be a player for Player of the Month in the American League.
In the last 15 days, Mike, he is 13th in OPS. That's out of all Major League Baseball. Players. Yeah, in the last 15 days, he's 13th.
Which
so
is
that's
pretty
really good.
Much the month of September. Yeah. Yeah. Today we're the 18th. Yeah, so pretty much the month of September. He is having an unbelievably great month with 15 runs, 12 RBIs. This is so awesome to see Wyatt Langford. I don't think that means next year he's going to hit 345.
Sure.
But I will say this. If you go back to Bobby Witt Jr.'s numbers, his rookie year when he was 21, 22 years old, he had an OPS of under 700 for the year. And if you look at for the year right now, Wyatt Langford has an OPS of 729. So I think he will be above 700. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like if he slumps, which I'm not saying he will, but if he slumps the last 11 games, he would still for the season have an OPS of over 700. Right now he has a 254 batting average. I'll tell you what, if he can keep his batting average above 250 for this year and
like
an OPS
deal.
Above, let's say, 720, I would say that's a big deal because if I have this right, it might be 710 now. 710 is about league average for an OPS.
Okay.
So he's above league average and average above league average in OPS. And so there's been so many people as this year has progressed getting to go on the road this last road trip that other teams are like, Wyatt Langford looks like he's taking off. And we think, you know, the ceiling is the roof or the sky is the limit.
Since people were asking, it's 150-1 on Langford for Rookie of the Year. I know that's not what you were focused
on. Is it Colton Cowser?
But no, actually, it has moved over to, I think, Luis Gill.
Oh, he must be having a great finish. He's a starting pitcher for the Yankees.
And then I think, is it the catcher for the Yankees? That's second Wells? On the list? I think he's next up on the list.
Okay, so, but I do think Wyatt Langford, I'll say right now, if you had to vote, I think he'd easily win Rookie of the Month in September. So, here's my next discussion off of Wyatt Langford. He hit third last night. We all know Wyatt Langford can fly. He scores from first on singles, on doubles, he scores easily from first, on base hits to the outfield from second base, he scores literally every time, and the play's not even close. So maybe I don't have enough time here, guys, but next year, Corey Seager's healthy. Wyatt Langford ends up hitting .333 in this month. He has all, I think, the better lineup for the Texas Rangers is Wyatt Langford batting second because of his wheels, and Corey Seager batting third, because I do think they're going to be batting second and third next year. And if I look at the way I want to combine those guys, Corey Seager is a base clogger. He's a jogger. He doesn't want to get hurt running.
Oh, no, yeah.
He still gets hurt.
You don't want him to get hurt running
right.
either.
So he's and even when he's healthy, he's slow. Everybody, I'm not making things up. This is factual around baseball. He's a below average base runner because of his speed. He's smart on the bases, but he's slow on the bases. So if Wyatt Langford has Corey Seager on second base and he gets a hit, it's going to be first and third or even second and third at the end of that at bat. Now, if he gets a double, he'll score easy. But if, like, you know, Wyatt Langford can sometimes turn a single into a double by his speed.
He can score from first plenty of times.
Corey Seager's just like, I'm just jogging to third. I'm not going to get hurt. I'm not fast anyways. I know who I am. Well, wouldn't it make sense? Corey Seager, who hits usually in a year 40 doubles and 30 home runs, this year he's going to fall short because he got hurt again a lot. If he's going to be in your lineup and Wyatt Langford's going to be in your lineup, doesn't it make sense when Corey Seager comes up, if he hits a double in the gap, that Wyatt Langford scores easy from first base?
Yeah, absolutely.
When Corey Seager gets a base hit and Wyatt Langford's on second, he scores easy from second base. Now, the opposite. If Wyatt Langford hits a double in the gap, it's second and third. If Wyatt Langford gets a hit with Corey Seager on second, it's first and third. So to me, I think this is a good question for Bruce Bochy today at 12:20. I know this is a future question, but when you look at what Wyatt Langford's doing this year and you look at the speed of Langford and you look at the speed of Seager, does it make sense if they're batting second and third in your lineup next year? Does it make sense for Langford to bat second, Corey Seager to bat third? And here's the deal. Here's the answer from analytics. Well, and I'm making this number up, but I think I'm pretty darn close on it. If I bat a guy second versus batting him third over a 162-game season, he's going to get approximately 30 more at-bats for the whole season. And I want Corey Seager getting 30 more at-bats than Wyatt Langford. What if I tell you the guy batting second's only going to play 110 games because playing him at shortstop causes him to get hurt?
All of a sudden, that cuts into
so
that
now
number.
If I only have 120 games max of Corey Seager, I can't use that number.
Yeah.
That number, if I'm in that meeting, I tell the analytic department, well, that number's thrown out because he's going to miss 40 games because of injury because we're playing him at shortstop, right? So he's going to miss 40 games because of that. Now, if we move him to first base or DH, I have him for 150 games in my lineup. I'll go with you. So here's the deal. Do we want to move him to first base and DH so we get the 150 games out of him, or are we going to play him at short and get 110 to 120 games out of him? So then my question becomes that. If we're playing him at shortstop, he's batting third. Playing him at first and second, we can have the discussion of Corey Seager gets 30 more at bats batting second.
There's a lot more to this, and I love that we got Boach coming up here in a little bit, and I hope we discuss that with him, Mike. I do want to know, who do you have batting first? Because I'm putting two runs on the board if Corey Seager's up at the plate with two runners on.
I think that's for another baseball nugget.
I love it. Great discussion.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo. Maybe we got some news about the Stars. Maybe I got some more news about Bobby Witt. We'll talk about it all next right here on the Fan.